when you announce that a president of the United States, while in office, can commit all of the crimes against the American people in violation of our federal laws while in office, that moves the United States of America, you know, one giant step in the direction of a banana republic.
Robert Mueller's investigation into interference in the 2016 US election that saw Donald Trump become president offered shocking revelations. With Trump once more a presidential candidate, Global Insight assesses the Mueller investigation, the subsequent report, and its bearing on the rule of law in the US today.
Well, I respect the move, but the entire thing has been a witch hunt, and there is no collusion between certainly myself and my campaign, but I can always speak for myself and the Russians, zero.
If we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime.
Donald Trump commenting on the investigation in 2017 and special counsel Robert Mueller at a press conference following publication of the report in 2019. Glenn Kirshner is a former Department of Justice prosecutor who worked with Mueller in Washington, D.C.'s Homicide Division and is now a professor of criminal justice law at George Washington University. He discusses what Mueller's report did and didn't say and why, and assesses the subsequent impact through to today.
So I remember distinctly two things in the sort of dark period that was the Mueller investigation, the Mueller report, and Bill Barr, former Attorney General's treatment of those things. One was Bill Barr stepping to the microphone and suggesting that the Mueller report cleared Donald Trump. I remember watching Bill Barr spin the Mueller report on live TV, and I really felt sick to my stomach because I wasn't buying what was coming out of Bill Barr's mouth. And then the second episode that caused my heart to sink was when Bob Mueller stepped to the cameras not long thereafter to, in essence, set the record straight about how Bill Barr's recitation of what was in his report, the Mueller report, was not accurate. And I can tell you, knowing Bob Mueller, the person and the supervisor that I worked for, you know, that was not easy for Bob Mueller to do. When you say Bill Barr sort of mischaracterized the Mueller report, that's not our conclusion. That's not our spin. That is what a federal judge in Washington, D.C., Judge Reggie Walton, concluded after a hearing. Bill Barr misrepresented the findings of the Mueller report. He said Bill Barr, quote, spun the Mueller report, and he said Bill Barr's stated conclusions are contradicted by the Mueller report. I know what an extraordinary, thorough, meticulous, and aggressive investigator Bob Mueller is. And of course, the Mueller investigation was his baby. He headed it up. He assembled the team that would investigate all things Trump-Russia and possible crimes by Donald Trump. And he generated a remarkable report, some 900 pages. But because there is a Department of Justice policy that says if somebody can't go into a court of law and defend themselves against an accusation that they've committed a crime, then prosecutors are not permitted to expressly say they committed a crime. Might sound counterintuitive, but Bob Mueller stopped short in volume two of the Trump-Russia report of announcing that his investigation proved Donald Trump committed crimes. Instead, he said, my investigation clearly does not exonerate Donald Trump, but all I am prepared to do is lay out the evidence that suggests he did commit crimes, but I will not announce that I am concluding he committed crimes. The reason Bob Mueller was not permitted to say he concluded Donald Trump committed crimes, and the reason Donald Trump wasn't in a position to go into court and defend himself against such an accusation, is because the Department of Justice has a policy that is enshrined in a memo that an office called the Office of Legal Counsel, OLC, generated, saying back during the Nixon affair, Watergate, we basically don't think the federal government, the Department of Justice can prosecute a sitting president. Now, mind you, there's no law, there's no precedent, and there is no Supreme Court ruling that announces a sitting president cannot be prosecuted for crimes he commits against the people of the United States. But the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice issued basically an advisory opinion saying, yeah, we don't think it's a good idea for you to prosecute our boss, the president of the United States, who is in charge of the entire Department of Justice. When you announce that a president of the United States, while in office, can commit all of the crimes against the American people in violation of our federal laws while in office, that moves the United States of America, you know, one giant step in the direction of a banana republic. Of course, we have now been sprinting in the direction of a banana republic since the Supreme Court also said, by the way, we don't think you should be able to prosecute a criminal president even after he leaves office. So that's why we are in a very tight spot in the United States on the rule of law front right now.
Matt Kaiser, Senior Vice Chair of the IBA Criminal Law Committee and a partner at Kaiser, a litigation firm in Washington, D.C., assesses special counsel investigations into Trump, from Mueller to Jack Smith, who's indicted Trump post-presidency in two criminal cases, characterized by Trump and his team as politically motivated and a witch hunt. And the lessons here.
Mueller was hired because he was a Republican. They thought that would give him credibility. You saw almost immediately how that credibility went away. Trump started attacking him the same way he has been attacked for anyone else who's investigated him. And then you get to Jack Smith. The appointment there was slow. Many people could see this was going to be a race against the clock to get that investigation done and prosecutions done by the election this year, by the 2024 election. But Merrick Garland took, the attorney general took it was about 2 years, maybe a little bit more, before appointing a special prosecutor to investigate Trump's conduct around January 6th. And that is time that I think everybody wishes they had back at this point, just because the investigation takes a lot of time. Getting it through the courts, as we've seen, takes a lot of time. And now the word is there's not going to be a meaningful trial or hearing on Donald Trump's January 6th conduct, his classified documents conduct, before the election in November. So I think the legacy of Mueller seems to be that special counsel investigations just don't work very well when it comes to Donald Trump. And that was sort of the first example. Now I think Jack Smith is doing his level best to do whatever he can to hold Trump accountable, but the courts and the clock are thwarting him. The lesson that I've drawn from this is that really our best hope for, if you don't like a leader like Donald Trump, the best hope for defeating that leader is at the ballot box and not at the courthouse. Courts move incredibly slowly, and you know, much of their work is off camera. Our media environment moves incredibly quickly, and much of that requires something newsworthy and engaging visually. And I think courts are ill-equipped to respond to those pressures from our news cycle, especially as it relates to politics. Doesn't mean the courts are doing a bad job or the wrong thing, right? Courts have different sort of criteria of adequacy. They've got different goals. But politicians, I think, are playing a public relations game. They're playing a perception game. And courts just don't do a great job of meeting the moment for how modern telecommunications, modern news works. So Trump, I think, has consistently sort of beaten the courts and avoided accountability because he understands that gap and exploits it well. And also, you know, this is a problem with a system which has due process, as our courts do. Process means you get more procedure. And Trump has been really good about asking for more procedure all the way along the line. He appeals things that no one thinks have any chance of winning. The judge in his New York hush money trial said, look, the strategy all the way along has been to litigate and relitigate and relitigate again by filing the same motion many different times with very small differences, which require the court to deal with it each time, which gum up the process and just make it slower and harder and more painful to litigate against Trump. That's been a really effective strategy for him. And he's been working it for 8 years. And I think the lesson of the Trump era is that our courts can help and can provide a check in part. They're a part of a system of checks, but really ultimately the check on someone who would move America into an autocracy or into a dictatorship is through the ballot box and not through the legal process.
The criminal cases Trump faces are on hold for various reasons, and it's now up to voters to decide whether he should be re-elected to office. Shan Wu, a former federal prosecutor and now a white-collar defense attorney at McGlinchey in Washington, D.C., examines whether this situation represents a failure of the rule of law.
I don't think it's a true failure in the sense we often think of a failure, meaning that there will be no accountability. It's simply impossible. There are times, I think, when the rule of law does fail us in this country for people who are not as powerful, as well off, you know, even approaching Trump's level of power, it fails all the time. Folks who are vulnerable end up being prosecuted and they don't have the resources to defend themselves. There's various inequities where the rule of law fails. When it comes to the head of state, Trump here, it's failed us in the sense of the timing here. And I think it's failed us because of the institutional assumptions that are sort of the progeny of Mueller's assumptions. I think the Department of Justice under Garland did face an enormous logistical task following January 6th, where they had all these people engaged in violence, and they had to make a decision, you know, how are we going to deal with that, in addition to the election interference theories that were part of that. They chose, as is often the case in law enforcement, to do the violence part first. That usually gets the most attention. Everything from local police to federal investigations to grab violent defendants first. Big chore. They had to track them all across the country. They did a very good job in finding all those people, but it gave them a very, very late start in terms of going after the actual election interference aspects, which resulted in Trump ultimately having the January 6th indictment. That, you know, I think was due to Garland wanting to follow a more traditional path, being probably reluctant to look like he was going after Trump himself, and wanting to be really cautious about how they proceeded there. The late start that they got for appointing Jack Smith, it's late sort of in hindsight. You know, you wouldn't necessarily say he was dragging his feet, but if you're looking at the political timing of things, when the election was going to happen. Of course, Garland can't predict Trump will be the nominee either. But when we look at it from the big picture, it was an impossible timetable. It was bound to become very close to the election itself. And that's what we're seeing now. Plus the random factor that the United States Supreme Court reached out, issued this absolute immunity presumption for official acts, which was just literally out of thin air. I mean, that's never been the case that there was such a doctrine within the Constitution. All of the previous experience, including the situation against President Nixon, all indicated there was criminal accountability. In Jack Smith's January 6th case, it obviously caused a huge obstacle where they had great delay having to go back, think about how to reshape the indictment itself. And now they're still in the midst of how is that going to be litigated with the trial court before they could ever get to a trial, which was pretty clear quite a few months ago, especially after the Supreme Court decision that it, you know, made the trial absolutely impossible. And that's a failure of the rule of law, not because Trump theoretically can never be tried and or convicted, but it's a failure because it's allowed the voting to go forth in a very unprecedented situation where there is this huge open question, again, about a potential president of the United States and whether there is criminal wrongdoing involved with them. And as I've called it in writing as sort of forcing the vote to occur in darkness, and that did not have to happen. Now, of course, if Trump is reelected, there is going to be a greater failure of that rule of law, which is at the federal level. He'll simply be completely authorized to get rid of the cases against himself forever.